This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
Primetime for Wednesday, December 22nd, 2010. About two more shopping days until Christmas. Well, a little bit more than that because you got this evening. So time to start thinking about it, guys. You know, get out there. The stores are emptying out. Your choices are going to be limited, which is always one of the big problems. If you go too early, there's too many choices.
That's true.
And I'm terrible with choices.
Wait till those shelves get cleaned out.
And then whatever's there, you know, cheese straightener, whatever it is. Here you go, honey.
You get a real good deal on the Christmas stuff late, too.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Well, you know, but see, they all have, they now have Boxing Day sales in, like, May.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, like, stupid, isn't it? I don't know whether I'm getting a value or not, because you know it's going to be even less when Boxing Day is over.
Yeah, probably.
I've often thought, you know, as a family, why don't we hold Christmas, like, on the 27th?
It's a heck of an idea.
So, we'll have Christmas on the 20th. We'll all go shopping on the 26th. We'll save a crap load.
Well, it's kind of an arbitrary date, you know. It was just kind of pulled out of the air.
The 25th?
Yeah.
Well, it's...
As Don Cherry said, baby Jesus' birthday, is that what you're going to tell me?
Well, I don't know.
I'm not sure they can actually prove that, Bob. I think they kind of agreed on that one.
They just said, well, let's pick a day. We have to pick a day,
and this is the right time of year for it.
Maybe we could all do that. Would you like to change your birthday? Are you happy with it?
It's okay where it is. It's in a reasonably good spot.
Yeah, mine's okay, too.
You know, you don't want it colliding with any other big events.
Oh, hell no.
My daughter's birthday is New Year's Eve. She's grumpy about that. One of my kids' birthdays is Boxing Day. He's grumpy about that.
Oh, happy birthday today to my newest grandchildren, who are one today.
Speaking of
the twins.
More holiday birthdays.
The twinners.
They'll hate their parents for that forever.
Yeah, but they're only one now. They don't know any difference. I got to call them tonight, by the way. Remind me.
Yeah, they get the one present for the two things. This is your birthday and Christmas present.
No, I don't think so.
And not from their granddad, maybe.
Gramps will cough
up. Get them the cheese straighteners. That's what you're going to do. They're going to enjoy those as one-year-olds, aren't they?
Well, at some point. By the way, FYI, we have now hit $179,391 in our bid to build schools around the world, principally in Africa. And that's 21 schools that we have built. I didn't, at the beginning of this, I refused to give a target but I will tell you this. In my wildest dreams, I was hopeful to get 20. I didn't think we'd do it. I thought 10 probably, I think we'd probably do 10. But 20 was sort of we're now at 21 and we have 2 days left.
And 25, what happens at 25, Bob?
You tell them.
At 25, on Christmas Eve, on this very show, Bob, like Jerry Lewis, will sing. Maybe not the same song as Jerry Lewis.
No, I'm not singing Jerry Lewis' song. I got
to
fix
it. Bob is going to sing a song in a Jerry Lewis-like fashion and we're all going to weep and it's going to be great.
But that's four more schools. We got to build four more schools by Friday.
Just having said that was probably two schools right there.
Well, we'll see.
People want to hear this, Bob.
Go to fan590.com, click on Pinball Clemens Face, and I'll tell you what to do, and hopefully you'll find it in your heart to give a little bit. It'll make you feel great, I promise that. Glenn Healy a little bit later on. Bob Rutina, the mayor of Hamilton. Big trouble. And getting ready for the annual holiday hockey fest. It's kind of a gorge.
It sure is.
It's like games all the time, every day, every hour. It's the World Junior Hockey Championships this year in Buffalo, and the president and CEO of Hockey Canada is Bob Nicholson. Hello, Nicholson.
Guys, it must be a slow show today.
Why, to have you on?
Christmas Day, myself on. Okay, we'll try to fill a gap here.
This is one of your big events of the year, Bob. So we always have you on for work.
We have you on other days just because we like
true.
You. Today we're actually having you on because you have something to talk about.
You know what, Stephen, Bob, we do have something to talk about, and Christmas Day on the 25th is perfect because we know the next day is the start of the World Juniors, and it's going to be a great one this year, Canada-Russia. What a way to start this tournament.
Yeah, how do they, is there a seeding thing? Do they put names in the hat? How does it work?
Yeah, it goes through a seeding, and in fairness, the host committee has a couple options on seeding, and I've always liked the last few because we've had the traditional Canada-US game on the 31st, but we're in different pools, so they couldn't do that, so you know what, probably no better way to see where our team is to play Russia right out of the get-go. And, you know, we've played okay in the first two exhibition games, but we still got a few more steps to go before, you know, we hit Buffalo and on Boxing Day and playing the Russians.
Bob, what kind of a Russian junior team is this? Because you know they've been all over the map and over the years. What do we got this year?
You know what, Steve? I think they're going to be a real good team, and we got a little indication of that in November when the Canadian Hockey League had their regular tour with the Russians. The Russians won more games this year than they've won in the last 4 years combined, and you know now they've added a few more good players to that. So I think Russia is going to be one of the favorite teams here. You know, I think Russia, Sweden, the U.S. are going to be real, real strong.
Would I be wrong in saying that, my perception of this of the Russian team the last, and I don't even know how many years, but quite a few years, has been invariably there are numerous highly skilled players who will be highly thought of when draft day rolls around, but as a collection, they somehow have failed to achieve the kind of success you would expect. Is that unfair?
No, I think that's a pretty good comment, Bob. You know, they are skilled. When you look at them individually, at the junior teams the last 25 years, you look at them in the National Hockey League, they are very skilled. The key to them, will they come together as a group of 22 players and become a team? Or will they self-destruct as individuals as they go through the tournament? And, you know, sometimes you think they're self-destructing, and then all of a sudden, boom, they just blossom as a team, and other times they go the reverse. So it's a bit of a crapshoot, and, you know, I'm not sure if playing them off the first game is the best or not. I guess we'll make that decision after the game on the 26th.
It's funny though, guys. You know, because if we go back to our earliest recollections of Russian teams, what worried you about them was that they really were teams.
Yeah, played together all year long.
They worked together. Everything was there. Weren't it wasn't about the individual excellence. It was about working together as a unit. And five-man units used to go up and down the ice. Like they knew exactly where everybody was going to be at every second with those little tic-tac passes and stuff. And now it's gone completely the other direction here, Brent.
I think the last team like that, I guess it was in 92, they won the gold medal in Albertville, I think, the CIS. It was and that was kind of the end of that cycle where you had those teams. You know, because players started moving around, and you know, you didn't have the core Central Red Army team, which was the core of the Soviet national team, and guys started doing their own thing, and they had a hard time. You know, I think at the elite level, the Olympic level, they're starting to get their act together again, but they had a hard time. You know, there was factional, right? Old school, new school, North American guys versus guys playing over there. You still have a bit of that, the NHL guys versus the KHL guys. It's been a tricky proposition for them.
Yeah, and it still sits there in the juniors, Stephen. You know, they've got players that are playing in the Canadian Hockey League. They've got some coming from the KHL, some from the junior league. So they're trying to still piece that all together. But, I just got back from Moscow on the weekend. I was over there. They had their national team playing against Sweden, Finland, and Czechs team, and they won that tournament. One game I was at, there's over 15,000 people, and you know, the KHL has done some good things over there. You know, we hear that debate of where they are, but there's been some positive things. And I see Russian hockey getting really strong in the next 4 years. There's a huge push already for 214. And 214 is about the Winter Olympics, but it's about their hockey team first and foremost. So there's going to be a lot of focus on all levels of hockey, and you know, one of the discussions we had was women's, but you know, this junior team is really important to them as they go forward.
So was there any progress on the women's side?
You know what, Bob, there's really good progress. You know, and we had lengthy discussions with Alexander Steblin and with Tretiak on that, and they're coming back with a proposal, a three-year proposal with us, trying to get a Canadian coach also to get to Canada for a good length of time over the next 3 years. And so hopefully in the next couple of months we'll be able to do a program with them to improve their women's hockey. And that's the first time I've seen sort of that level of individual engaged over a long period of a meeting on what to do and how to get it done. So that's a real good step, and I think it just shows you the power of the Olympics again, especially when you host.
But I wanted to, with the tournament, going back to the tournament, just what kind of atmosphere it's going to be. We've had the kind of, I think back to the Fargo tournament. So you had a tournament in the States that was close enough to Canada where you had a ton of Canadians show up, but that's a smallish town and you know, more of a junior hockey town, you know, but in the kind of the size of the place. This is an NHL town, an NHL arena. It's on the edge of a huge population base in Canada, 5 million people around the Golden Horseshoe. It's probably as close to Toronto World Junior Championship as we'll see. What are you expecting?
I just got off the phone with Dave Ogren a couple hours ago, who's heads up USA Hockey, and he's just over the moon right now. They'd had conversations into Buffalo earlier in the morning, and they're saying even for the lesser games, which describe that non-Canadian or non-U.S. Teams playing, they've sold over 12,000 tickets for those games, and they expect every Canadian and every U.S. game to be totally sold out. So, you know, it's catching on. I would still suspect that probably 60 or 70% of them are Canadians. But, you know, it's in a building that the Buffalo Sabres have done a very good job using their database and getting it out to their fan base. But USA Hockey and their teams are getting strong, and Americans are starting to, you know, look at what's happening at the World Juniors. So that's good for everybody.
Well, I think I can probably give you a bit of an update here, Robert. I talked to Michael Gilbert, who's the Director of Public Relations for the Sabres, who are orchestrating a good deal of this. And he told me earlier today two facts. They are over 300,000 tickets sold, which is pretty close to Saskatoon. I think that's where they were. That's number one. Number two, none of the games are sold out, but there's a bunch that are very close. And he said 65% of the tickets sold have been sold to Canadians.
Yeah. So that's pretty close to what I'm getting too, Bob. And
yeah.
You know, that number of 300,000 is really good, because the other arena where a lot of the games are being played only seats 2,500 people.
Right, it's very small. So
yeah, so, you know, so that's, you know, the way we're in Regina, which wasn't big, in Saskatoon, not an NHL building. And, you know, those numbers are great. And our focus right now is Buffalo and, you know, where this team is going to be. But when we come back next year into Calgary and Edmonton, it's going to be mind-boggling where the numbers are going to be. We were at 50% sold out 2.5-3 weeks ago when we finally put tickets on sale to the public, and now we have a lottery that the people should get into. They have until the end of the World Juniors, and we already have 20,000 people in requesting packages in this lottery.
My goodness.
So I don't know where that number will be after the World Juniors when it really gets revved up, but hey, this is a huge tournament, and you know what? People love it because of the emotion with the kids, and people want to see Canada win.
Bob, is it going to outgrow junior hockey markets in Canada?
It has, I think,
to a degree. But can you ever go back into a London, a Kitchener, a place like that?
You know what? That's a good question. We're going to have to really start to look at that, because after Calgary and Edmonton, we've got 15, 17, 19, and 21, and we have to start, naming those sites. We're definitely going to continue to work with the Canadian Hockey League. We've just finished, we've got three exhibition games. We put one in the Air Canada Center last night, and we had 16,000 people at the exhibition game. I know Kitchener and Oshawa jammed to watch those exhibition games. But in the big tournament, you can say Calgary and Edmonton, we're in the junior markets.
Sure.
Both the Hitmen and the Oilers are playing.
Yep,
can we go back to a London? We could do that. You know, we were in Regina and Saskatoon, and those are two just Western Hockey League teams. We had good crowds, and we made more money than we did when we're in the big buildings in Ottawa. So it's how you promote it, and we want to make sure that there's still ways that, the pricing doesn't get out of hand, that, you can still get the young kids can get in and see some games.
Starts on Wrestling Day, a Boxing Day. Is that UFC Day now?
It could be MMA Day.
Yes. MMA Day, that's right, MMA Day, Sunday. in Buffalo. It goes for 11 days. It's 11 days of chaos and hockey up the wazoo. But it's become a holiday institution here in Canada. Mr. Nicholson, have fun. Enjoy yourself. Behave yourself, more importantly. And happy holidays to you and yours.
Yeah, you guys have a great holiday, and we'll talk to you soon here, guys.
You bet. Bob Nicholson, the president and chief executive officer of Hockey Canada. When we come back, are the Hamilton Tiger Cats on their way out of Hamilton? Or is this just another bump in the road? We'll talk to the mayor of Hamilton, Bob Rutina, when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, on Sirius Channel 97, and on Rogers Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
Coming up to 25 past the hour on this Wednesday, the 22nd of December. Bob McCown, Stephen Brown on the radio program. Glenn Healy, Hockey Puck, will join us a little bit later on. Boy, big news out of your hometown today.
Yeah.
As of this moment, there is no place for a new stadium for Hamilton and for the Pan Am Games and subsequently the Hamilton Tiger Cats, raising all kinds of questions of now what? Now, the deadline has not passed.
February 1st.
There's a new deadline, so it's still time to fix this thing. But as of right now, it appears, well, I don't know where you go with it. Let's talk about it. Here's the, I guess, the centerpiece now in this this whole scenario, the mayor of Hamilton, Bob Rutina. Robert, good of you to join us. How are you?
Well, great, and thank you so much for giving me the opportunity.
So this was a surprising day, and I would have to think for you, a disappointing day. Yes?
Yes. First of all, though, we had to call a meeting as soon as possible because when we found out the numbers, 70 to 90 million required by CP to obtain their railway yard in the west end of the city, we knew we had to get past that and get on with our lives. So I introduced the motion asking for evaluation of the Confederation Park site, which is fairly simple in that people have concerns about whether it's a fish, wetland, you know, all those, there are a number of issues that it could be. I said, okay, at least let's get an evaluation. And the city manager, Chris Murray, said, we can provide a useful report in time for January 14th for you to base a go-forward decision.
Right.
And lo and behold, council voted 9-6 against hearing that information.
Now, I'm sorry, do you know why council would specifically do that? Does this have anything to do with history?
Well, the history was that they had did a walk-on motion last time around under the direction of the councillor in whose ward that park is. And it's the old story in Hamilton of vote trading, and you do this for me, I'll do this for you. So enough votes were cobbled together to take that out of the list of possible sites.
Mm.
So it looked like same group, a couple of new people on council. One is particularly connected to the environment. So they voted again not to hear the information.
Bob, not to go over too much old ground, but just as a point of clarification, why did it take so long to get a price out of CP for that land? Because that compromise site, the Ticats signed off on it, the city liked it, and then suddenly this number shows up, which blows it out of the water.
I don't know. That's a good question, Stephen, because I wasn't the mayor at the time and wasn't party to, you know, the details of the negotiations. We sort of heard at the beginning it could be 20, could be 30. But then I talked to the vice president of finance for CP in Calgary, Don Campbell. I called him Friday. I said, what are your numbers? And he said, we're confident that these are the right numbers, $16 million for the land, $36 million to move the railway yard, and somewhere 20 or more to relocate a company called Steelcare that's located at that site, a customer of the railway. So he said, we're confident. We went over and over with all of our financial people, and those are the numbers. Well, I didn't ask about why it took so long. I didn't really know how long or what was promised and so on.
But that's kind of what put the city up against the wall here. And I guess the question... You know, well, the question everybody has, what now? What are you going to do? You don't have – the Ticats have said they won't play at the West Harbor, which is the only site the city has ever approved, or the previous council approved at least. And the East Mountain land has apparently been sold. Confederation Park is now off the table. What do you do now?
Well, I got to go Christmas shopping, and then.
Oh, you got plenty of time for that. Don't worry about that.
No, to be fair to your question, I think the dust is going to have to settle. I'll wait for a day or two. Christmas is upon us, and I have very good relations with Scott Mitchell, Bob Young for sure, Doug Rye, who's the CFO, and I got to hear from them where they are. But the other thing, of course, is what I was trying to do as the mayor was protect the funding of up to $100 million from the province and the feds. We can't seem to find a way to take their money. And so what I didn't want to do was what happened today. It was I wanted to be able to say we worked as hard as we could. We did an evaluation of Confederation Park. It turns out it's a fish hatchery or, you know, whatever thing could have defeated it. That's fine. But at least they would know that we had done our best to try to take their money. But what do we say to them now? We didn't even want to know about Confederation Park, and that has been a premier site. Many people have talked about it all through the election campaign. Ever since the beginning, it was talked about, and then it was suddenly taken off the table arbitrarily. Let me just say one more thing. I think that the real failure here came facilitation when Michael Fenn came to the city to facilitate between the city and the team, and his mandate was all viable sites, but it wasn't. And I think that what he should have done was say, either we do all viable sites, or there's no need for me to be here anymore. And so particular facilitation was rendered useless by the insistence that no site such as Confederation Park be considered.
Now, Bob, how about Ivor Wynne? Because obviously it came up today in the meeting. It is the idea of putting money into Ivor Wynne and trying to
fix it up,
make it acceptable, fix it up for the Ticats. What about that?
Well, now we've got a game of this. There are some who are playing poker here and saying they'll never go. So do we put $90 million into it and then they go? Or do we just keep going with the patches? And you guys have been there. It's had its day, let's be honest. So I guess it depends a lot on how the Tiger Cats are going to respond. I bet Hazel McCallion's pretty happy today, though, because I wonder if she is going to try to get the funding that might have gone to a bigger stadium here to give Mississauga a bigger stadium there. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But there's a whole lot of pieces that are now in motion.
For those across the country that may not be aware, Mrs. McCallion is the longtime mayor of the city of Mississauga. And even, I think, Bob, the city of Milton was saber-rattling for a while there about, we'll do something here, bring the Tiger Cats here. So there are markets out there that have at least indicated an interest in pursuing the Tiger Cats if they decide to leave Hamilton. But, I mean, there would be, you would accept, there would be huge irony if that was to come to pass under your watch as mayor.
Well, the other thing, too, is it would likely happen roughly within the year before the next election. And as the vans were rolling out of Hamilton, some people would be called on to explain.
Well, so you wait now. When does council reconvene?
Well, not until the new year. So I'll probably give Scott Mitchell a call tomorrow. I know they left fairly quickly after the meeting. I'm sure they've had some kind of a discussion. I'll talk to them and see where they want to go. But especially I've got to talk to the premier and try to explain why we aren't taking their money. And I'm not sure how I'm going to do that, but that's the problem for the city is the way we've positioned ourselves as not wanting to work hard enough to at least attempt to provide a site that would be viable. When we say we don't even want to hear the information about that site, I don't know what kind of message that sends out.
Would you even contemplate going to the premier and saying, okay, here's our scenario. We got one site that we think we can get people to move on, but that's the CP site, and it's going to cost us, I don't know, $20 million more than we thought. Yeah. Can you help? Would you even contemplate, alms for the poor?
I was kind of hoping we might get another $20 million. Now you want me to get another $70, $80, $90 million?
I don't know. I mean, would you even contemplate that?
Probably not, and I'll tell you why. there are a number of big projects coming into Hamilton. One, the most important project from a community building point of view, and Stephen would know this, is GO Service at the old James Street North Station,
yep.
Which would open up into the peninsula. And I know St. Catharines and all the people along there want that. That actually, you know, how much money have they got?
Yeah.
You know.
And you
and
can't.
There are a couple of other things, too. So we will be having to ask the province for, you know, money. And so am I going to take $70 million out of the available pot? I'm not sure I would.
But if you don't have the, if you don't build a Pan Am Stadium, if you are out of the loop on that, and the and the monies that have been assigned to the city of Hamilton for that project, if you are left with trying to figure out what to do with the Hamilton Tiger Cats after the Pan Am ship has sailed, you're in big trouble, huh?
I would say,
yeah,
it's serious, you know, Bob. And Stephen, this is not a pleasant situation to be in. It would have been easier had we shown a little more faith in just evaluating this darn site. So when you don't even want to do that, what is going on? You know?
Yeah, it sounds like it's a political agenda, not an agenda of realism.
Oh.
We will watch with great interest. Have as happy a holiday season as you possibly can, we'll stay in touch down the road, I hope.
And thanks for all the great sports programming, Bob. It's always a pleasure to listen.
Thank you so much. There's the mayor of the city of Hamilton, Bob Rutina, who has arrived on the scene. Sort of, it's almost as if the horses have run away, and now he's left there with the gate in his hand, going, "How am I supposed to fix this?"
Well, it's a mess, and there are, again, I don't want to bore people with Hamilton issues, but one of the things that you sensed in this last round, Bob, was just fatigue. Yeah, you know what, the council chamber, they had the emergency meeting today, you could see it on TV, there's the public gallery, it wasn't packed full of people, you know, on either side of this debate.
I wonder if they would have been there.
They're just worn out.
I wonder if they would have been there if they'd known the drama that was going to take place.
Oh, I think everybody knew it was coming.
Did you think this vote was going to go this way?
I
did, huh?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good chance it was going to go this
really,
way.
Really, huh?
Yes, indeed. And but I think people are just worn out, and there's been a lot of venting on this thing, and been a lot of strong opinions, but I think right now there's a lot of people just saying the hell with it. And I know that's not, maybe the most thoughtful approach to it at this stage, but you can kind of understand.
All right, I don't want to make any presumptuous statements because I don't live in the city of Hamilton. I don't spend any time in the city of Hamilton, but you've been there your whole entire life. You are part of the fabric that is there.
Mm-hmm.
Forget this stadium. If the Hamilton Tiger Cats leave, what does that really mean to the city of Hamilton?
Well, it's not fatal.
It never is.
You know, teams have left cities, and cities have been fine. The Hamilton Tiger Cats are a big part of the traditional identity.
Nothing more synonymous with the city of Hamilton than the Tiger
Cats. There's Steel, and it's going too, right? U.S. Steel shut down right now, the old U.S. Steel. It's a different city than it used to be, and there are a lot of people in Hamilton who don't care about the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Hmm.
But I think that the Tiger Cats are part of the cultural fabric of the city and the history of the city, and I think it would be a real shame to lose them. And I think sometimes you don't know what you've lost till it's gone. That said, and again, I don't want to go too far down this road, the city did vote for a site that I actually quite liked and a lot of people liked.
And Bob Young didn't like it.
And Bob Young didn't like it.
Yeah.
So they had a stadium. So it's not just the city turning this down. The Tiger Cats turned it down first.
Yeah, I wonder if they readdress that. As the 11th hour
passed. I think we're past that, yes.
Back with more. Glenn Healy will join us next when Primetime continues. You're listening on the Fan Radio Network or on Sirius Channel 97, perhaps watching on Rogers Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
Sixteen minutes before the hour, McCown and Brent in our Toronto studios. Here's the voice of Hockey Night in Canada. No, maybe not. One of the voices you hear. Usually sitting in his little perch right there on the red line. Here they come, there they go. Here's Glenn Healy from Hockey Night in Canada.
Blah, blah, blah.
Have you ever said that? Here they come, there they go?
Yeah, I like that. You could do my job if you ever went to games.
My Tim Hortons coffee mug could do your job, Healy.
Now, and Glenn, he does go to games. He just sits in very...
I saw you at down
plush
there.
Places,
wasting
you know?
Time and space on with that good seat you have.
I love the two seats that are behind me. So we've got a cameraman in there with me, and this guy's about 6'4", 250. He's a big guy. And there's me, and then there's right behind us are two seats, and they spend the entire game staring at his ass and my ass.
Well, at least they're cheap seats, though, right? They don't pay much for those ones down low. That.
No.
Those are probably 10, 12 bucks. Huh?
Exactly. Give them a discount for those, I'm sure.
I'll bet they do.
His ass, my ass, behind me, dumbass.
Yeah. And he probably had those seats left to him by his parents and grandparents and whatever.
They love it, though. Like, you look at their faces, you know, and whistles and after the periods are over, and they're just ecstatic to be there. Because you do get a good look at the bench, so you can watch the coaches snap and players breaking sticks and throwing things, and it's, you know, it's like the HBO special that is on.
Well, I was going to ask you about that
last week. Did you not enjoy that?
No, but were you ever as profane as Boudreaux is? Like I've known Gabby since he played for the Marlies. I used to play ball hockey with Gabby Boudreaux. You know that?
No, I do now.
And I never heard such a potty mouth out of him when we were playing ball hockey in the industrial area in North York. And now, like, every other word out of his mouth is a bomb. What the hell happened to him?
Oh, well, he's trying to motivate a group of individuals that are highly skilled, highly paid, and for whatever reason can't get it done. I think the HBO special shouldn't follow them during practice and games. They should be following them after the games are over.
What do you think they're up to, Glenn?
You know what I'm insinuating.
I believe I do, yes.
Yeah, they're rock stars. The big thing for Bruce, and I love watching that because, you know, I loved watching Bilesma's response to his team, and, well, he's won 12 in a row. But just, you know, you've got these athletes, and you only have 2 minutes to get their attention. They're very visual. We all have kids. We know what they're like. It's not like the old days where sit down and Al Arbor or Pat Quinn would go up to a board, and 40 minutes later, he's still drawing a Picasso. No, you've got 2 minutes. You got to get in their face. You got to get their message across quick. And this is the win game. So you better do your best to win because, you know, changes happen real quick in this game. And he knows it, and he got his team's attention. He had mine, and I'm not even on the club.
In your experience, though, when you were playing, the loud guy versus the thoughtful guy, which one was more effective?
Well, I don't think coaches can be just one or the other. I think they've got to be a collection of a lot of things. They've got to be an alarm clock. They have to be a psychologist. They have to be a hard ass. They've got to be a soft guy. They've got to be it all. And the best coaches understand when you need what you need. Al Arbor was famous for when things were going bad, he was the first guy to put his arm around you and say, you know, I need to have you tonight. We've got to get out of this. The minute things were going good, you know, then all of a sudden Saddam Hussein walked in the locker room and you thought, is this guy not paying attention? We're winning. But that's how he made those streaks last. Instead of 6 games, they went to 9, they went to 10, and he really pushed you as far as you could push. He would bend you but not break you, and I think the coach has to understand that. He also has to understand which players can be yelled at. Pat LaFontaine, you couldn't yell at Pat LaFontaine. Not a chance. I mean, there was a guy who was very soft-spoken, very caring, very compassionate type of guy. He's the guy you don't get in his grill and get at him. Pat Flatley, dumb as a stump. I mean, you could go at him in any way, and it didn't matter. I mean, Flats was going to jump out of that moment and be great. And so you've got to do it. Just can't be one way. It's got to be a collection of ways, and it's got to be a collection of ways for all different guys. Life is not fair, and I found that out when I played with Gretzky. There was a couple different rule books for a couple different players.
But Glenn, don't the guys do the guys in the room look first to the coach when things, or do they look to the guy who's the leader in the room, whether that's the best player or the kind of charismatic figure? I remember I talked when I was doing the Orr book. I remember guys telling me that, you know, that Orr, even though he wasn't necessarily a loud guy, but when he got mad in the dressing room, it kind of everybody just got quiet because when things they looked at him and looked to him and kind of took their lead that way. You know, is that more important than the coach coming in and giving the big pep talk or yelling at guys sometimes?
Well, I think it's an evolution. And what you have is every dressing room has a dynamic. And you've got the yapper, the guy who doesn't stop. From the minute he starts putting his pads on and his skates on, he's filling you in. See, he's read the book of everything, so he knows everything. So he's filling you in for an hour straight, to the point you want to muzzle the guy. And then you've got the, you know, the guys who will never say anything. Then you've got a, you know, maybe the player who is very vocal and he's a leader. But then you also have, like you had mentioned, the Bobby Orr type, the Matt Sundin type, the Mark Messier type. You know, Mark was not a guy who came in the room and was standing at the pulpit game in, game out. But when he stood up to make a speech, you were listening. And it usually started with him. You know, if things were going wrong, he was the guy when it was coming off the rails to step up and say, okay, we're pulling it back. And, you know, I think the captain should work in conjunction with the coach, so you're not getting this repetitive screaming, yelling back and forth between coach and captain. You know, it's the captain goes to the coach and let me handle this tonight. You know, I'm going to kick you off the bus so we can go out as a team. You're okay with that? So, you know, the bus would be pulling up and, you know, Mess would stop it and Keenan would be on the side of the road with Dick Todd and Colin Campbell. That brings the team together. He just kicked the coach off the bus. Well, that's great, and it works. But then there's times when, you know, the paint's got to come off the wall.
I guess what I'm wondering is, like, especially with the Capitals in terms of the TV show, you know, there's Gabby in there screaming at him. But on some level, aren't those guys looking over at Ovechkin and saying, you know, do you feel like it tonight, big boy? Are you going to play tonight? I'm not thinking that Ovechkin's a speechmaker in the dressing room, but, you know, he's the guy. He's the best player.
He's the best player, but certainly would you consider him to the best leader in that locker room?
I'm thinking not,
no.
But still.
Absolutely not.
But you know, if you're playing with him, that if he feels like it, you're going to have a good night. That's, you know, he can carry the team and lift the team by what he does in the. And if he doesn't feel like it, it's going to be a long night.
And skill is his worst enemy because he has so much of it. He rarely has to exert any type of effort other than just put the gloves on and go out and be the best player in the world. But this is the journey you have in your National Hockey League career. Gretzky went through slumps. Messier went through slumps. Bobby Orr went through. Everyone goes through slumps. It's your response to these slumps. And the Capitals have responded. They had a 26-shot period against Boston. They won the next night. They won again last night. And they seem to have this talented group back on track. And it takes sometimes a lot of work to convince guys, don't rely on your skill. Work first. Because what scorers tend to do is, oh, I'm going to score tonight. Okay, that's great. But no, you've got to be in good position first. That gets you the puck in the right spot. That gets the puck in the right spot to shoot on the goalie, to score the goal. So it's almost like you can't put the cart before the horse.
Well, you can't put the cart before the horse. It goes backwards. That's what happens usually.
That's right, and that's where they went in the standings, backwards.
I want to talk about the Dallas Stars, and I want to talk about the Atlanta Thrashers, two teams that are playing well on the ice and two teams that are virtually bankrupt and have nobody in the stands or a nominal number of people in the stands.
Did I say Merry Christmas already?
Yeah, okay. And I mean, these teams are so bad. I mean, Healy could buy them with the change that he has in his pocket right now.
I could buy Phoenix with that deal.
By two of Phoenixes. And if you were so inclined, Gary wants to know, where the hell were you a month ago? But you know what? We don't have time to do it, so we have to bid you a fond adieu, and we will do that by saying thank you very much for an enjoyable season and year to date, and have a happy holiday season to you and yours, and we'll talk again in the new year.
Well, I never had an answer for that question anyways, Bob, so thank you for that, and you know, Merry Christmas to both you guys and to all the listeners. It's a wonderful time of year, and remember, give to some people that aren't quite so pleasantly blessed as we are. Help the needy.
Hear, hear. Glenn Healy from Hockey Night in Canada. Our thanks to Bob Rutina, Glenn Healy, Bob Nicholson for joining us. For Stephen Brunt, Bob McCowan. We'll see you tomorrow night on Primetime. Good night from Toronto.